So, Glenn, how are things down there in Wonderland?
Well, it's good to talk to you again, Marty, and thanks for having me back. You know, as we're talking today, we're less than a week away from the upcoming elections, and it looks like, by all accounts, it looks like here in the House of Representatives, the only question is how many additional seats will the Republicans add, and then B, in the U.S. Senate, how many will the sufficient seats be added by the Republicans to take over the Senate? And it sure looks to me like the answer, at least to that second question, is yes. There are about 46 seats, as we're speaking right now, that most people regard as being locked up for Republicans in the Senate, or close to locked up for 20. And then in the battle of the various, you know, really contested races that are widely being followed, the Republicans seem to have taken a small but consistent lead in enough of those that you're going to get to 51. And the question is, do you get to 52, 53, 54, those kinds of things. We'll find out. You know, a lot of people's, for people that might be listening to this, what a lot of people are looking at as an early indicator is the state of New Hampshire. New Hampshire comes in pretty early in the evening on the east coast of the U.S. There is a former Massachusetts senator named Scott Brown, who's running against the incumbent Democratic senator in the state of New Hampshire, the next-door neighbor state, a woman named Jean Shaheen. And that has been a race that really tightened up and is in some polls, it's like a dead heat. And then there are also two U.S. House races going on in New Hampshire. Currently, the U.S. Senate seat and the two House seats there are all three held by Democrats. So the indicator of the tell might be that when New Hampshire comes in, if Republicans win none of those seats, it's going to be kind of a muted evening for Republicans. If they win one of those seats, either the Senate race or one of those two House races, then it looks like Republicans will probably be on the way to having the kind of night that most people think a decent night, a good night, you know, but not like some kind of blowout night. But if they should win, Republicans win two or more of those seats, then saddle up. It could be a much bigger Republican night than anybody sort of recognized. So that might be one early tell for people to follow on Tuesday night.
Well, I noticed everybody seems to be running as far away from Obama as they possibly can. I mean, some are even prefer to call on Bill Clinton rather than Obama.
Yeah, I tell you, I've seen a lot of polling data, and that's one of the advantages to being, or disadvantages, the case may be, for being in the slot that I'm in. I do get access to private polling data, and it's really stunning how toxic Obama has become. I mean, he's obviously been radioactive with self-identified Republicans pretty much all along the way. But he is just doing terribly amongst independents or swing voters. And he's had a really muted, there's just a lot less intensity of support amongst Democrats, self-identified Democrats, who continue to support him, but they're not really happy about it. And they're certainly not. And of course, the concern for Democrats is that you know, some of these intensity readings. You've got two things. You can take a poll and you can say, hey, things might look pretty close. Would you rather have a Republican or have a Democrat pretty close? But when you dig down in and you have intensity, how strongly do you feel that the intensity is way down at the moment on the Democratic side? And of course, if intensity translates into turnout ratios, you know, you what can become sort of a relatively close margin can turn into, if not a blowout, at least like a much bigger win than you saw. Now, the other side of it is that when you dig down into these numbers, you'll find that the people who are supportive of Republicans, the swing voters who are kind of saying, I'm going to vote Republican this time, they're doing it, but they're not really all that excited about it. They've got tremendous anxiety and a sense of foreboding about what's happening in their own personal lives. But they're very forlorn, frankly, because they think if they feel, and they tell people in these focus groups and things like that, it doesn't matter who I vote for. I vote for, you know, Obama to go up there and give us change you can believe in, quote unquote. Instead, what he does is, you know, he keeps, if you voted against George Bush because you didn't like George Bush and the Republican military policy, well, who did Barack Obama keep as his secretary, his defense secretary? It was George Bush's Secretary of Defense, Robert Gates. If you didn't like Bush's economic policies, who did he make his Treasury Secretary? It was George Bush's President of the New York Federal Reserve, Timothy Geithner. And, of course, nothing changed, obviously, at the Federal Reserve. Nothing changed in the bowels of Treasury. Nothing changed in the State Department foreign policy apparatus. In some cases, you know, we had, obviously, you had a famous example would be Robert Kagan, who was part of that project for the New American Century, one of the big leading neoconservative think tanks that was one of the big drivers behind the engagement into Iraq and some of the other foreign adventures. Who is the deputy assistant secretary of state for European affairs? It's a woman named Miss Victoria Nuland, whose husband is Robert Kagan. And so Victoria Nuland was the one that famously said F the EU. She used the full word, though.
Mm-hmm.
F the EU in talking about machinations within the Ukraine. So if, the point being, wherever anybody is on any side of those issues, they despair because, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, I elect Hillary Clinton, I get the same crowds running things.
Yeah, nothing seems to change. I mean, that if the Republicans have a bang up, you know, night here next week, nothing will change unless there's some sort of change at the leadership. I mean, Bonner's got to be thrown out, but I mean, what is the likelihood of that?
Well, let's talk about that, but let me just to reinforce your point, when you talk about nothing, if you say, okay, right now, the change that's for sure within the vector is who's going to be Senate Majority Leader. Is it going to be Harry Reid, or is it going to be Mitch McConnell from Kentucky? Harry Reid obviously being the present Democratic leader, McConnell would be the Republican leader if everything goes according to Hoyle. Well, my question would be, okay, let's suppose you do have Mitch McConnell becomes the new Senate Majority Leader. There's certainly, things would certainly be done differently over there, and there certainly would be some differences. But if anybody tried to seriously say that as a consequence of Mitch McConnell becoming Senate Majority Leader and the Republicans taking a majority in the Senate, if anybody thinks there's going to be any change at the National Security Agency or at the FBI or at the Federal Reserve or the NSA or the CIA or the so-called deep state that is running a larger and larger percentage of the decisions that are being made within our government, the unelected, unaccountable, unknowable, and unknown bureaucracies out there, anybody thinks there's going to be any change in any of that, I think, is deluding themselves. So in that sense, people that argue, hey, voting doesn't make any difference because nothing's going to change, have got something of a point. Now, on the House side, there's the question. Is there any sort of a chance that there would be, you have the continued Republican majority, but does Mr. John Boehner remain the Speaker? And I think that's going to depend on a number of things. The high likelihood is that he will be the Speaker of the House. I suspect there is a possibility he won't be, but that would have to begin with the Republicans having a much smaller night electorally than a lot of people are sort of thinking. Maybe gains in the very low single digits. And then what happens, the Republican majority coming back, but the composition of that majority changing a little bit. So there's a much more, a great many of the people that are about to be elected here are less favorable to Mr. Boehner than some of the people they're replacing. And the big race, not within the Republican conference, but is on the floor of the House. This is the very first day when Congress organizes, the new Congress organizes officially in January, first thing you do is you elect a Speaker of the House. And that's not, there's a nominee that comes from each of the party caucuses, but it's actually a vote on the floor of the House of Representatives. So somebody has to get 218 votes. And if there were to be enough Republican defections not to vote for the Democrat, but just to vote for somebody other than Mr. Boehner, and Mr. Boehner did not get the 218 votes, you know, after a ballot or two, and it became obvious there was a stalemate, and then you could expect there are other members out there who I think would be more than willing to step up and try to offer their own stuff, but they're not going to do it until it looks like there's some sort of a reasonable chance of winning. It's the old adage, don't strike a king unless you kill him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what happened to the effectively the really, I don't know, I guess the, you would call the Tea Party people and the Ron Paul.
Well, they're still there, and that's kind of the question. Is that group of people big enough and committed enough to what it is they're saying to become that margin of difference? So if you had a Republican majority in the House of Representatives that was not, you know, monstrously large, and you had a swath of Republicans that said, "Hey, we need a change, need to vote for somebody different," that would the math would work to deny. Now there are quite a few members that are people that are running who have actually specifically said they will not vote for John Boehner for Speaker, and then there's another cohort out there who have pointedly refused to say who they would vote for or refused to commit to voting for Mr. Boehner. So there are 10 members coming back in November who didn't vote for Boehner at the beginning of the present Congress. So if you had, so a lot of it, the possibility of something like that happening begins with taking a look at how big is the majority. Because if you have a Republicans have the majority, but it's a small enough majority that you could say, you know, disaffected Republicans could say, "Hey, I'm withholding my support," and it'd be enough to keep the current Speaker under 218. Then suddenly it could get interesting, but we're not going to know that anything like that until after the election, until after next Tuesday.
Well, it certainly would be.
If the Republican victories come in on the high end of estimates, that pads the majority, so you could have a certain number of defectors, and you still could get to 218 without those defectors, and so which makes it unlikely that something like that would happen in the first place. So. A lot of machinations and calculations there to be made.